Welcome to ZGR, Zeta Global Radio. I'm Lainey Savante, and I am here today with four extraordinary filmmakers who are using the power of film for change and really doing really well at it. And we're going to get right into it right now with our first guest, Debbie Lang, founder and president of Caring for the World Films. She is an award-winning photojournalist, director, and producer whose career spans over 25 years with major media networks and film production companies. She founded Caring for the World Films after completing her third tour covering the Iraqi war. Wow. She's an avid adventure traveler, and she is here with a very powerful film that I know that all of you out there want to know about and help support her. Please welcome to the show, Debbie Lang.
Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing out there in the world. My God, some people would be like petrified to go to these places that feel so foreign, and you're out there in third world countries showing the world how we're not so different and then how we are so different and making a huge awakening for people. So I'm excited to share with the people the work that you do.
Well, I'm excited to share it with everyone else, too.
So we met years ago when you were really, I think you had just finished. I mean, we were showcasing, I saw Hearts in the Himalayas, which was so powerful. And I know recently with the earthquake in Nepal, we've been very big advocates for the world to know how people here can support Nepal. And you could probably attest to it. It's not like because it's not in the news anymore, it's gone away. People need to continue to support what's happening there. What is happening with Hearts in the Himalayas?
We released it in 2012, and it has been playing all over the world. It has been seen in over 100 countries, and it has brought great awareness to Himalayan healthcare. And they've been able to expand their program significantly. And as a result of this earthquake, I mean, thank goodness that they have a good, PR department as a result of, the documentary. It just showcased them in such a way that even now the government and other entities that didn't even know they existed, just sought them out as the go-to organization in that region, the Dading region.
Wow.
Really has brought, just put the target on them.
What happens a lot is that you hear something, it's like, I remember when the tsunami hit, and then it goes away. And then there's people like Himalayan Healthcare who are there in the trenches. And because of the work that you did, people now know about it, and you're all saving lives. And that's really what the focus of this show today is, why people like you are so driven and passionate about helping people who are really so in remote areas of the world. I mean, some places people have not even heard about. And of course, we'll talk about that here soon about your newest project. Is this something you've always wanted to do? You've been an avid traveler, or you are just the consummate humanitarian?
Well, my grandparents were missionaries. And so I grew up in that kind of environment, and I became interested in international travel, and I became a journalist and pretty much traveled the world telling stories, all the bad things happening around the world, and which led me to Iraq. And while I was there, I was just seeing that not all the stories out there are bad. And I wanted to do some of the good stories, and I was shot down. I was basically said, no, we're doing these stories. And, and I got tired of the, if it bleeds, it leads mentality, and how the industry has become basically an entertainment factory. So I got out of it in 2003, 2004, and decided to seek out good stories, people who are doing good on the planet. And, kind of give good energy, get good energy, and maybe it'll help heal the planet. So, and I kind of just stumbled across these organizations that were tiny, that nobody knew about, that were doing just incredible work. And so what I did is I would, I'd research them, just research them and vet them to make sure that they're doing exactly what they say they're doing. Their books, their auditing, their 900 forms. I interview all volunteers, board members, and then if they pass that level of scrutiny, I would ask them if I could come on one of their trips and kind of snoop around and document what they're doing. And most organizations don't want that kind of, attention. They just kind of want you to show up and give them money and praise their work. And I go in almost pretty much as an investigative journalist, not 60 minutes in your face, but I go in and I just look around and I get to know the people and I get to know the volunteers and I get to know the people they're helping. And so I get the firsthand story.
How long is that process? Like, are you with them for months, for weeks? I mean, how does it all work?
Well, from start to finish, once I find them, it usually takes anywhere from as short as 6 months of research to, you know, completion could be 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
It's real in-depth what I do. And sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes the organization isn't what it's cracked up to be. So over the years, I've kind of evolved my process, so I know what to look for. And as a result, I've kind of whittled down the pool of quality organizations. And Hearts in the Himalayas, working on that project, Himalayan Healthcare raised the benchmark tenfold, to where it took 2 years to find an organization, which is my current project.
Well, let's talk about that current project. Back in April, you had a big press release come out that Caring for the World Films announced your newest documentary on the Nyaka AIDS Orphans Project. So let's talk about it.
Well, this organization came into our radar as a family friend had asked me to attend a fundraiser, not knowing what I actually did for a living. And I read everything I could about it and realized, wow, this organization is doing things that no one else is doing. And they're very experimental, they're very progressive, they're very inclusive, and they operate out of Uganda, a very remote village outside of Kampala. And the founder, we call him Jackson for short, Jackson Kaguri, he is a 2012 CNN hero. So CNN recognized him, but they did not do a story about the organization. So I'm kind of continuing on that path. So we're going to go in and we're going to do a story about him. You know, CNN vetted him pretty thoroughly. He said he was put through the ringer with them. And so he's been completely transparent. And that's one of the keys, is they have to be transparent. And so we're going to head to Uganda this summer, and we're going to check things out.
Wow, that's incredible. And just for the people who aren't really aware of the background, let's talk a little bit about the organization and what Jackson Kaguri does and why CNN sought him out and made him a hero, because it's really powerful what is going on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, this story is about a man who left Uganda to pursue his American dream. And when he returned to Uganda to visit on occasion, he realized that the people were dying. I mean, a whole generation of people in the village were gone, and the left behind were elderly people and orphans. And what was killing the people was HIV/AIDS. And he just said, in order to save my village, I've got to help them somehow. So he decided to take care of the orphans by building a school to educate them, because he knew that education was the key to getting out of poverty. And on the flip side of that, you had to take care of the elderly women, because that generation of people that are gone are no longer there to take care of the elders. And that is part of the culture and tradition of Uganda, is the children take care of their parents. And so you just have this void there. So anyway, Jackson came up with these projects, just seeking out experts around the world to find the best, most effective, sustainable method to save this village. And he started in 2001, and this year is going to be the first graduation class. high school graduation class for these for this orphanage.
That's amazing.
It's going to be fascinating to speak to the kids, you know, because they've lost everything, for them to be able to get this education and to graduate from high school to head off to college.
Yeah, really re-empower their life. Well, let's talk about two things in the few minutes that we have left. One is, I know that you're doing a campaign to raise funds so you and your crew can make your way over there. How can people get more involved, both with Caring for the World Films as well as the Nyaka AIDS Orphans Project?
Well, we have an Indiegogo project, or which you can access by our website, caringfortheworldfilms.org. It's on the front landing page, and they can donate funds. Every dime that we make goes directly to the project, and everything we, the resources we use in Uganda. All of us are volunteers, and we pay for our own travel. So we're hiring translators and drivers and, you know, people that are housing us, we're paying them. And so if you go to the website, you can, we have different levels. You can donate $25 or we'll take anything.
I mean, $25 US can go a long way, I'm assuming, in Uganda, that's for sure.
You know, most people make about, you know, $2 or $3 a day. So whoever we hire to work with us, you know, we'll get paid a reasonable, certainly generous wage to help us.
That's great. And Debbie, thanks so much for giving us just even the smallest beginnings of this, which is such a huge project, and we will of course track it. And I just want to invite everyone out there to check out the beautiful work that Debbie and her team are doing at caringfortheworldfilms.org. And again, we will be showcasing how to donate and get involved with the Indiegogo campaign on the Zeta Global Facebook page. Be sure and like us there and see what we're up to. And we will also have details on our bbsradio.com/Zeta Global Radio. So thank you, Debbie, for all the work that you're doing. We will be tracking your progress here on Zeta Global Radio, and thank you for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, when we come back, we'll be here with another incredible filmmaker, Reinhard Lorenz. Stick around. ZDR is excited to be a media partner at this year's Pure Living Expo taking place in Sedona, Arizona, July 23rd through 27th. Get ready to cleanse, rejuvenate, and empower yourself with the best of the best health luminaries of today. This gathering is more than just workshops, talks, and keynote presentations. You'll experience those along with the Pure Living Cafe, Earth School, Expo Showroom, a dance party, and so much more. Come for the live professional food prep demos with some of the most celebrated living food chefs, meet the wellness experts who are changing the future, and of course, take part in the incredible scenic and magical energy that only Sedona has worldwide. Get your tickets now at purelivingexpo.com. Use special code ZGR2015 and you'll get 10% off your tickets. I'll see you there in the land of the Red Rocks at Pure Living Expo, July 23rd through 27th.
Hi, I'm Sarah Jones, wellness advocate with doTERRA. Happy to be here on Zeta Global Radio. My special offer to all ZGR listeners is a lemon oil and A to Z essential oil guide when you visit mydoterra.com/Sarah Jones and purchase $30 or more. I'm looking forward to supporting your journey to health and wellness.
Hi, I'm Mindy, owner of Differently Designed Custom Stationery and Premier Invitations. Your invitation to your special event is the very first impression your guests will receive. Let's make it spectacular together. Whether it's a major gala, fundraiser, art opening, or social event, Differently Designed will work with you worldwide to design a unique and memorable look and feel that is exclusively yours. Visit us at differentlydesigned.com. Mention you've heard us on Zeta Radio. And
welcome back to Zeta Global Radio. We are here today talking to filmmakers who are blowing up the big screen and making powerful impacts for change. We were listening to Debbie Lang and Caring for the World Films. And she had just told me off air that when they were looking to film this documentary in Nyaka, there were several film organizations who really want to cover this AIDS orphan project, and that she was selected because she really knew how to vet and do the research and really cared about the organization, not so much about just getting a Hollywood film made or something. So I just wanted to acknowledge Debbie and congratulate her for this great documentary that's going to be coming down the line. Here we are moving into segment two, and I'm really happy in studio in Albuquerque at the lab. We have Reinhard Lorenz. He's the CEO and founder of First Eye Films, longtime producer director here from Berlin, Germany, but you've been here. You've now made this your home, and a million years in experience in film production. And also, I got to see one of his films on Armenian Genocide, which was so powerful. It was here at the Holocaust Museum. So we'll talk about that. So welcome to the show, Reinhard.
Well, thanks, Lainey, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited. Here we are in Albuquerque, and it's such a melting pot.
It is, and you know, when I came here, it was interesting because the same is true for Berlin. It's kind of a running joke in Berlin that everybody you meet and everybody you deal with is not from Berlin but has made Berlin their home, and the real Berliners are very rare, and you're very lucky if you find them and if you're friends with them, and they're sort of a different species from the people that you know. And it seems Albuquerque is somewhat similar, and I was surprised to learn that.
Well, what brought you here?
Well, you know, at the very beginning, it was a longer story. First of all, of me having worked in a previous incarnation of myself as a video artist in London. So I was working with a performance company that was working out of London, and I was their video artist producing video that went on the stage with theater/dance productions. And we toured around, and that was sort of my immersion and intro into the Anglo-English-speaking, you know, work world, which was, you know, that was a great start. And from there came an openness and a willingness to wanting to relocate to the U.S. The actual sparking point then, or the actual...
The catalyst.
The catalyst. The catalyst was a German lady who I met in Berlin and who had already lived for a long time in New Mexico and had sort of taken a break, and we met during her Berlin time. But she wanted to go back to the U.S., and she wanted in particular to go back to New Mexico. So me going to New Mexico was certainly influenced by this relationship. And then in the longer term, I came here and I sort of scoped out the place, and what certainly made it then... a decision was a job offer from UNM. So at that point, I knew that working freelance would take some time and build a network and all of that. So having a place to go to and a place to teach, which I did quite a bit at that point, was a great starting point.
So that was pre-Breaking Bad?
That was pre-Breaking Bad. Yeah, nobody, I mean, had you mentioned the word Albuquerque to me, I had to learn how to spell it. Other than that, even New Mexico, you know, in terms of Santa Fe as a tourist destination, is just not on the map in Germany.
I was in rural villages in India, and when I would say that I was from Albuquerque, immediately, I mean, the translators would say, Breaking Bad Albuquerque, where in my world travel before, it was always, is that in the U.S. or where is Albuquerque? So it's amazing the impact. Of course, the whole world knows Santa Fe and how gloriously beautiful it is. But that show really did put us on the map a little bit. It's really the antithesis of what we're talking about today, because today all of you who are on the show are showing how there are important causes out there, there's history out there, and how to make a greater impact, and all of you are doing that. I had the privilege of seeing you in your film about the Armenian genocide at the Holocaust Museum, and it totally blew me away because, of course, as we all know, the Holocaust that happened, people, I think there's maybe one, but now you're really bringing to light there's other cultures and communities who've been affected. So let's talk about that film, because I think that made a big impact.
Sure, and it certainly is a good example, you know, of a project where we're trying not just to make a documentary, which is, of course, what we always want to do as filmmakers, but to also have an impact on a community and to discuss a subject that is sort of still a hot topic in world politics once you start to know about it. And I mean, I was very fortunate to be approached by the Holocaust Museum, who I have a working relationship with since more than 2 years. And they had the Armenian community, on the other hand, approaching them saying, we'd like to update and upgrade the exhibit that already was there in the museum, which, how I just learned from a visiting Armenian filmmaker, was already pretty much cutting edge at that point. So not every Holocaust museum would mention the Armenian genocide. But we took it a step further now in terms of not just talking about the Armenian genocide, but sort of acknowledging the fact that it was a broader picture of a racist ideology of, you know, in the context of building a new state, which was Turkey, and wanting to eliminate everybody who was different. On April 24th, which was the 100th anniversary of the start of that genocide, is a historical documentary that sort of gives a short history of those minorities and how they've lived first in the Ottoman Empire and then dealing with Turkey. And I still have in the works a whole set of interviews with mostly descendants of eyewitnesses and survivors and people who have actually lived through that.
I think about you being German, and I think about when I was in Berlin and the wall had just come down and Checkpoint Charlie was still there. And you think about, and for me as an American, it was like, wow, can't we all just get along? We're just right there.
So you mentioning the wall coming down, I actually moved to Berlin in 1988. So I was there when the wall came down, and it was this amazing moment where at least we thought we all could be one, you know,
yeah.
Where ideologies come crumbling down and separation ends and people hug each other and there's an idea of how the world could be.
I mean, the vibration and the energy had been incredible. I mean, did that last for a while or was it short-lived?
It did. I mean, Berlin was for a few years. I mean, West Berlin before that had been a crazy place, but Berlin was an even crazier place in good and bad terms. But I totally agree, and I think it's one of the important things we can do creating documentary projects or any project along those lines that is not just laid out for entertainment purposes, and there's nothing wrong with entertainment. But there is a way of making films that have this in mind, that there is a bigger goal of that is, you know, still a utopia. I mean, it's not there, you know. It's being realized here and there in small little, you know, communities are trying that by separating themselves out from broader society, by saying we're those 50 people that are trying to live that way. And there's, you know, religions like Buddhism who have more of those goals already in there.
Well, the spiritual communities are popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
So we only have a couple minutes left. I know that project you're saying continues to need funding, because are you expanding it from the short that you're doing, and how can we learn more about that?
Well, we can learn more about it by going to firstifilm.com. That's my company's website, and there is some information about the project and also a way to donate. Great. To the since it's an ongoing project.
Is there any other projects that are coming up that you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, just briefly, there is a project I have in the works that is going to talk about learning. And it's talking about how learning works, sort of from speaking to children to adults to researchers, the cutting edge of, you know, neuroscience that is sort of bringing out
how the brain works.
Functionings and how the brain works and how the mind works. And that's sort of being contrasted with how schools operate these days and how schools and any institution of learning would need or could need to be laid out in order to actually really facilitate learning fully. So it is a comment on the ongoing, you know, big debate about the education system and how broken it is and how it needs fixing. But I'm trying to take it away from the political discussion and looking at the nature of learning.
I just saw that movie Lucy. I don't know if you've seen it,
but
it's all about how she accessed 100% of her brain and we only accessed 10%. And I find that whole totally fascinating from a spiritual perspective, as well as just how to tap into like the expanded part of who mm-hmm. we are. Mm-hmm. And any research on that, I'm always looking mm-hmm. for it. So, mm-hmm. but from the perspective of what you're doing, it sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thanks for being here, Reinhard.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Well, we'll look forward to having you back on the show as things develop. And stick around on Zeta Global Radio. We still have two more incredible filmmakers showing what they do and how to bring greater impact to the big screen. You're listening to Zeta Global Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Andrea Williams, publisher of Natural Awakenings magazine in New Mexico, your monthly health and wellness publication. We're excited about our June issue filled with so many uplifting events in our community. We feature an interview with visionary leader Barbara Marks Hubbard, tell you how to get your chi on at the Healing Chi Revolution, and share an article about Ama, the humanitarian leader well known for her healing hugs. Pick up your June magazine for details about these and many other events, plus more local news and inspirational articles, now at newsstands in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and Taos, or online at naturalawakeningsnnm.com. For inquiries about advertising your events or services, please call 505-999-1319. Have a happy and inspirational month of June.
The Lab Recording Studio is located in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the spiritual heart of the Southwest. Whether you're a singer-songwriter, band, voiceover actor, or have a film or TV show that needs scoring, the Lab is a wonderful facility to work in. The list of clients range from Sony, Macy's, and Toyota to independent films such as John Nussbaum's Maria Morte and shorts for Sperry Topsiders, Ralph Lauren, and more. Product quality is that of any big New York or LA studio, only without the big city expenses. Featuring marvelous places to stay and historical and spiritual sites to visit, consider the Lab for your next recording experience. You can visit us at thelabnm.com, facebook.com/thelababq, or email us direct at info@thelabnm.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Charles, and I'm here on Zeta Global Radio. And I'm talking about the film Sold. We made this film as a tool for change to help end child trafficking. It's been quite the journey for us, and we're now releasing the film in the fall. Right now, we are launching an Indiegogo campaign so that we can fund our marketing and outreach for the film. And you can find the Indiegogo at soldthemovie.com and on our Facebook at Sold the Movie on Facebook, and our Twitter is Sold Movie. And we do hope that when the film comes out that everyone will see it and help us in this global move to end child trafficking and work with the Taught Not Traffic campaign so that we can keep kids in school until at least the age of 16, when they're 80% less.
Welcome back to Zeta Global Radio on this incredible day of incredible people making very big impact on film for people who are really needing it in the world. And I am absolutely honored to have in studio, we're here in Albuquerque, which is great. We had Reinhard in studio as well. And this beautiful woman has created a film that has absolutely taken the film festival circuit by beautiful storm across the planet. We have Jane Charles here, and we will be talking about the movie Sold. So welcome, Jane.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, we're all excited to have you here, and it's been amazing to watch Sold and all the updates. I mean, from London to being on CNN to all over the world. So it's been a year since I've connected with you on the project, so tell us where it's been. Tell us the adventure of Sold and a little bit about the film for people who don't know about it and why it's so pivotal to be on the show today talking about changes with film.
Yeah, we created Sold as a tool for change, but it's a narrative film, not a documentary film. It's about a young girl from Nepal that's trafficked into India. It's based on an award-winning novel by Patricia McCormick that's been translated into 32 languages globally. And the book is actually required reading now in a lot of high schools, so it has a following. And we optioned the book in 2007, the spring of 2007, and a week later it was nominated for a National Book Award.
Wow, Beautiful.
And then putting the film together took some time. I mean, this is a cause-based film, and it's as a cause-based narrative. It was something that traditional funders didn't really understand. You know, we didn't have distribution yet. We had this grand vision of what we could do, and our hearts were in the right place, and we just went out and said, okay, we're making this film. We want it to really create change in the world of human trafficking. We want it to unify organizations and bring them together, because they're all working separately and all doing great work, but they could do so much more if they were to work together. And that was our vision. And so we ended up, instead of going with a traditional funder, or traditional distributor, we put the funds together ourselves. We had thousands, literally thousands of meetings. We went to conferences, met with a lot of philanthropists, and really found our tribe. You know, we found the people that cared so much about this issue and wanted to support it, and brought in a number of purposely brought in a number of investors that could become our support team throughout the process.
So were either of you, you and Jeffrey, were you both involved with the cause of trafficking before, so you sought out the book, or you came across the book, or how, just to go back for a second, how was it, because the book was out there, that you two got involved to, like, yes, we want to make this and adapt it?
So Jeffrey and I were introduced by a very good friend named Hank Benson, who passed away a couple of years ago from Crohn's disease, and really special human being. I feel like his spirit has been with us through this whole process. So he introduced us when we were in a place where we were making other films. Jeffrey lives in Mill Valley. I lived in Vancouver, BC. And we were both searching for that project that would bring everything together. We both wanted to do something cause-based. So when he introduced us, he knew that we would find something, but we actually optioned a couple of other books. We looked at other projects together. And then a friend of Jeffrey's had just been in India and came to the door and told him that she had just learned about how bad trafficking is in Asia.
Sign number one.
Yeah. And then a friend of his had been reading Sold and gave the book to him. And then the writer that we had write the first draft, Joe Kwong, his wife was reading Sold at the same time and gave the book to Jeffrey. Gave the book to Joe, who gave it to Jeffrey. Jeffrey read it, called me in tears, and said, you have to read this book. I think it would make a really great film. And we optioned it the next day.
I have chills. I remember reading the script, as you know that I go way back with you, and reading the script, I was just in tears. So I just couldn't wait for the film to come out. And then after seeing the film, I mean, it was just absolutely stunningly, heartbreakingly beautiful. I mean, I'm just so proud of you.
Thanks. Really? We're so happy with the reception to the film. It was one of those razor's edges that we had to really walk on, because when we had a young adult novel that could be read from by 13-year-olds and up, but when you actually put something, you know, you film something, when you can actually see the images, it's more visceral, you know, that sure. It really is, it's a very touchy subject. And also we have a young girl who at the time was 13 when we were shooting. And it was important to us that we weren't too graphic, that we portrayed the difficulty of the situation and the journey that this young soul went on from the beginning throughout, and showed that these girls are still children. You know, she's 13. She's going through this horrible situation, being kept in this brothel.
Yet innocence on her face. Just...
Yeah, and you see that her spirit doesn't break. You know, she almost loses hope, and then she finds community. She finds people within that community of the brothel to help her. The little boy, Harish, who teaches her how to read Hindi. And the girls bond together. And that's what we saw. We really wanted to be authentic to the issue. And Jeffrey and I did 6 trips to India and Nepal, met with hundreds of survivors and heard their stories, and saw that these kids, even when they have gone through this, once they're out and they've survived, they're stronger. They, you know, once they go through some trauma relief, they can be leaders. They can become leaders in this situation, and their spirit isn't broken. They somehow find a way back.
And I also just want to acknowledge the fact, for people who haven't seen the movie, we have Gillian Anderson in it and David Arquette, executive produced by Emma Thompson. But in this case, it's not about the high-profile celebrities. It's almost like it's beautiful. They're so it's so beautifully acted, but it's really about the essence of the story. And I find that really wonderful because everyone's like, oh, who's in the movie? And this is about everybody coming together to bring awareness to this issue. So kudos to that.
Thanks. Our lead actress is amazing. She's in Assam. It took us about a year to find her. Our casting director, Tess Joseph, lives in Mumbai, and she traveled all over with a team to schools and theater troupes in Nepal and India. And we ended up with an Indian actress. But the people of Assam are from, it's a mountain, mountain city, and they look very much like the Nepalese. And people in India, they didn't mind an Indian girl playing a Nepali girl. And in Nepal, they didn't mind an Indian girl playing a Nepali girl because they're so used to Indian actors and seeing Bollywood films and that kind
yes.
of thing. But in Nepal, it was difficult for them to allow the children to be in the film. It was a little bit more of a stigma that they were concerned about having their girls, the Nepali girls, in the film. So we were so happy once we found her, and she's just riveting. She's in almost every scene, and she was the most professional actor on the set by far.
Absolutely. So for people who haven't seen it, where is it at now, or what's the next phase into the journey of Sold?
Well, we're in a very grateful place. We started this journey of film festivals almost exactly a year ago, and we didn't make the choice right away to do a year of film festivals. It came gradually. We kept getting invited to other festivals and to be the opening night film in festivals. So we were the opening night film. Sold was the opening night film for five film festivals and won four audience awards.
Terrific. Wow. Mm-hmm. And where is it at now?
We're prepping.
A year later, so what's happening?
Right, we're prepping for distribution now.
Great.
And we have our marketing and outreach team that we've started putting together. We have an Indiegogo campaign that we're launching soon. And we have an Indiegogo campaign that will probably run through June and July.
Terrific.
And that will help fund our outreach because we really need a team of people bringing organizations together in each city to get people to come out and see the film. And then we'll have an extended theatrical on-demand release as well before it's on VOD.
Okay, so we just mentioned Indiegogo campaign for a very important reason. Where can they donate if people feel so called to do so? We have a lot of people actually who listen to Zeta Global Radio in India and Nepal. Very strong listenership. So thank you, India and Nepal, by the way.
Great. We have a Facebook page, and it's Sold Movie, and the link to the Indiegogo will be on the Facebook page.
Sold Movie or Sold the Movie?
Sold the Movie.
Sold the Movie, okay.
Sold the Movie on Facebook and Sold Movie on Twitter, at Sold Movie. And our campaign is hashtag Taught Not Trafficked.
Okay.
And Taught Not Trafficked is a campaign that we're doing with Child Reach International to keep kids in school, because if you keep children in school until the age of 16, they're 80% less likely to be trafficked.
Wow. Well, we will certainly keep following the journey of Sold, and we also will have information on the Indiegogo campaign on our Zeta Global Radio Facebook page, as well as our bbsradio.com/Zeta Global Radio Facebook page. And of course, you can find out more about Jane Charles and the work that they are doing globally. It's not just an issue that's happening in India and Nepal. This is a worldwide crisis. And the more that we can talk about it and have films like Sold out there bringing the awareness and keeping it current, the more that we can really make a slight dent, a major dent, whatever we can do, we have to do it.
It's a $150 billion business, and it's in every country in the world. So yes, we just have to say this can't happen anymore.
Jane, thank you so much for being here and sharing your gifts through film. I'm really honored that you were able to spend time with us today.
Me too. Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back.
Attention ZGR listeners, are you ready to use your intuition through the power of numbers? You've heard her interviewed on Zeta Global Radio. Now join best-selling author and intuitive numerologist Ruth Dreher for her upcoming teleclasses. Registration has begun, and the class is open to a very limited number of students. Any level of experience with numerology or none at all is welcomed. Students will work directly with Ruth Dreher to learn her beliefs and philosophies in this ancient system of Pythagoras, the father of numerology. Classes include meditations and discussions and prepare you for the next level of the Master Intuitive course. Enjoy this opportunity to learn from one of the most internationally known numerologists of our time. You may learn more about Ruth Dreher by visiting cybernumbers.com. For more information and to register, please call 903-534-4873.
Hello and blessings, ZGR listeners. I'm Tom Carlson from Tech Love in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Tech Love is a conscious community of light center located in the heart of Nob Hill. Our space offers a warm and inviting setting for all of your gatherings. We invite and enjoy hosting pilgrims who are guided in the oneness throughout the world. From meditation and channeling groups, drum circles, kirtans, and other healing events, we are here as a physical location to draw people into communication with their higher purpose, oneness. If you're coming through New Mexico or already here, visit us at 3901 Central Avenue Northeast, just east of Carlisle, or visit us on the web, techlove.us. Namaste.
Hi, this is Patricia from Sculpt Laser Lipo Weight Loss and Wellness. Are you ready to live your most vibrant life? I can help you lose those stubborn extra pounds painlessly and permanently. And as a special offer for ZGR listeners, I'd like to offer 11 sessions for the price of 10, and that includes nutritional and lifestyle counseling as well. Visit SculptLaserLipo.com or email SculptLaserLipo@gmail.com for more details.
Hi, I'm Jane Charles, the producer of the film Sold, and you're listening to Zeta Global Radio.
Welcome back to Zeta Global Radio. We are here today. Really, really, it's a gift because we are talking to all the filmmakers, three you've heard so far, about how they are using their gifts through storytelling to light up the big screen for change and to bring awareness to important causes, to important situations. And in our fourth and final segment here, we are with filmmaker Rich Romero, and we are thrilled because he did a film that we'll talk about that I think is unusual and unique and extremely impactful in my mind. So without further ado, let's welcome Rich to the show.
Thank you, everybody. Glad to be here. Thank you, Lainey. Thank you, Howard.
So I had the privilege to watch your film, Echo de la Montaña, Echo of the Mountain. And let's tell the audience a little bit about this and also the inspiration behind getting this film developed, because it's powerful.
Well, this film has many facets, and one of the main facets definitely focuses on Santos de la Torre, who is a Huichol artist down in Mexico, and Huichol is an indigenous tribe. Santos de la Torre is a artist that works in the medium of bead painting, and that's basically small chikira beads that are done with an applique on beeswax. And some of these Huichol artists create multi-panel murals that basically discuss their religion, their beliefs, their family, and whatnot. And this particular film was based on a mural that Santos de la Torre did for Mexico, but it's kind of an interesting story here. This mural that was done was taken from Santos de la Torre and was actually installed in the metro station in Paris without Santos' knowledge, and it was a gift back in the 90s from President Zedillo to Jacques Chirac, and it actually still sits in that metro station now.
Wow. Well, I find it so striking and heartbreaking because, of course, everyone I want to go see the film and to see what goes into these murals. And it's so emotional the way the film's laid out, really showing the essence and the journey that goes into the mural. Because as you said, it shows their religion, their practices, their ceremonies. It's so deeply personal. So for something like this to happen, it really, I was so touched by it and saddened and angry, but it was so beautifully portrayed how the outcome is. So I just want to acknowledge you for it and thank you for bringing it to light and talk more about what it was like to do this story in Mexico. It looks so rural. So if you want to touch on that a little bit, it would be great.
Sure. Well, the way the story got introduced to us, and actually it started with my partner Michael Fitzgerald, who's a filmmaker, and myself. We had met Santos in Morelia for the annual Morelia Festival, the international film festival that they have down there. And going through James Ramey, who's a colleague of ours, we were introduced to this story. And I guess as it went on, we decided that this was kind of a travesty that Santos never got any credit for doing this mural. So a few filmmakers, including Nicolas Echevarria, who's a famous Mexican director, came on board, and we went forward to start producing this film and producing a film in Mexico. You have to jump through many, many hoops. So it took a couple of years even before we got to principal photography. I started off as one of the producers at the beginning of it and then moved on to doing camera work for the film. And so we put it all together, and through the financing of HSBC, we got the grant to do the documentary and started principal photography. Very sad story, but I think that we were able to touch on some of the other Huichol ways of life, including their relationships with peyote, and actually getting the permission to film part of this peyote journey so that Santos asked permission from the gods if he may create another mural. And what that ended up happening is we rented a place in Zacatecas, and we filmed the whole making of another mural, which was basically an 80-panel mural with over 1 million beads easily. And as you saw in the film, that follows their religion, their daily life, and a lot of spiritual things as well. And I think that Santos portrayed that very well and is an amazing artist at that.
So thank you for that. And how was it for Santos to have this film? And then here you are showing it at all these film festivals. I saw that you were in Abu Dhabi and all over the world. What's it like for him to go from his I even saw just in like to go from his sacred ranch or his property into the city to work on this, but then to go into this world of entertainment and film festivals with the lights, cameras, action, and all the flashing, like, what an experience this must be for him.
Well, I definitely had the opportunity to take the 12-hour by foot march to Santos's ranch to meet his family, his daughters and his sons and his grandchildren, and very rural indeed. I mean, it was way out in the Sierra Madre Occidental where we started some of the filming at the beginning of the film, as you saw. And as you said, we were in Zacatecas in the city, so you get to see that kind of relationship there. Santos, as far as on the international film circuit, you know, is a very humble gentleman, and, you know, he all took it in and was very, you know, very happy, but he has no problem going right back to that rural ranch in the Sierra Madre. So, it was a pleasure working with him, and I still get to see him about once a year down in Morelia, and that's always a treat to catch up with him.
Wow, beautiful. Oh, yeah, he's just pure heart. This is quite an extraordinary film, and I think it'll touch your heart. If you want to learn more about it, how can they do that at this time?
Well, right now we have a website up, ecodelamontana.com, and basically, the translates into echodelamontana.com. Once they check out that website, they'll be able to see if there's a screening in their hometown where they're at.
That's great, and thank you for that. And I know that we were talking offline a little bit about what's happening in the land where Santos is has his residence, or what is happening there. I know you're starting to share some of the stuff with Canada. I just wanted to touch on that importance.
Yeah, that's a good call, Lainey. Thank you for bringing that up. When you see the film, there is a pilgrimage, if you will, on the peyote march that Huichols take once a year. Not all of Huichols, just some tribes. It just depends on the year. And some of these routes right now are being threatened by Canadian mining companies. And I say Canadian mining companies, meaning that Mexico leases land out there in Mexico. And the Huichol tribes are really non-recognized by the Mexican government, which is sad. So they kind of live in obscurity there. So, you know, these mining companies come in and block off these sacred routes that have been used for, you know, thousands of years. So right now UNESCO is trying to do something about that. So we're keeping a close eye on that. You know, it's something that is very, very sad.
Well, it sounds like another documentary. I mean, do you love being in this down in the land over there? It feels like something that you resonate with. I mean, it's interesting. I ask you that question and then I preface it. It's like filmmakers go all over the world, which of course all today we've talked about people who were in India, they were in Nepal, now one's in Uganda. I mean, it's part of what we do, but sometimes you find a region that is completely in alignment with who you are. And it feels like this is a really special place for you.
Absolutely. You know, living in New Mexico, being right on the border with Mexico, when we had the chance to do this film, I absolutely love Mexico. And it's just a shame of the bad press that it gets. Probably one of the most beautiful countries in the world. And I never had any problem down there. And it was just a blast to be working down there. The bureaucracy and the red tape and everything to get something shot was quite the pain, but it all worked out for the better, and you got to see the film. I think you would agree that we were able to produce something that was really, really special.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree, and it's great. So Howard watched the film with me, and he said to me, I am absolutely a better person just watching this film alone. I mean, he was so touched by it. We both were, and we couldn't wait to have you on the show to really talk about this and the work that Santos is doing with his mural and the beadwork. I mean, that alone is astonishing. With Cindercone, we represent a lot of artists through painting and their different modalities, but seeing this beadwork, I mean, you really have to think about how patient and how grounded you must be inside to be able to work through the intricacies of the work he's doing with those beads. Well, we only have a minute left here. Do you want to share anything else you may be working on or give us a little bit of insight in the world of Rich Romero?
Well, basically right now, just trying to stay busy, always looking for the next project. Have a science fiction thriller to be shot in New Mexico, hopefully in 2016. But also working on a great story called Laughing Boy, which is a Navajo love story that was written by Oliver Lafarge, and it won the Pulitzer Prize, I believe it was in 1932, and trying to bring that to the big screen. And we're trying to do that all in the Navajo language, so should be interesting to do. So.
That sounds terrific. And as you've heard today with some of the other filmmakers, ZGR, we're always supporters of film. We're in the film industry and lovers of the arts, whether it's film, music, or art itself. And we always want to let people know out there if they ever want to be part of crowdfunding campaigns or way to raise money for these films, because we have amazing filmmakers, and we want to get these stories told. There's so many out there that need to be told, just like this one, and all the ones you've heard today. So we hope to have you back on. We know we will, actually, Rich. So thank you for being here today and sharing your story along with everybody else.
Great, you guys. It's been a pleasure being here. And once again, thank you, Lainey. Thank you, Howard. And just a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you, guys.
Excellent. Well, that wraps it up for an amazing show. I hope you all enjoyed it as much as we had enjoyed putting it together for you. And again, check our Facebook page at Zeta Global Radio, and you can learn more about these films and how to see them. Have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks so much. Take care. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Zeta Global Radio here on BBS, Saturdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I am your host, Lainey Cervantes-Quirk. Join us as we come together for your visionary platform for spiritual journalism. We'll be interviewing authors, musicians, filmmakers, and world leaders who are coming together into one accord and sharing a story. ZGR is part of the Zeta Global Group Network.